As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
It's Straight Outta Cobham, a show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. Today, Chelsea hit Borough for six to book a Wembley date. We look ahead to the week's second cup clash. The women's team reached the Champions League knockout stages. We'll hear from Harvey Vale and do a quiz. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Straight Outta Cobham. What a busy show we've got for you today then, gang. Never a dull moment is there in the world of Chelsea Football Club. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams, and I'm joined by two of The Athletic's very best. Good morning, Simon Johnson.
Good morning. Can we say, for the right reasons, normal service is resumed back at Wembley?
Yeah. I mean, yes, we can. It's going to be Chelsea's 30th match at the new Wembley, and that excludes Premier League games against Spurs, which is pretty impressive. A 35th major cup final. Dom Fifield's back with us to reflect on it too. You okay, Dom?
I'm very well, thanks, Matt. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I very much enjoyed Tuesday night, and that is where we are going to start today's show.
It's Wembley for Chelsea and for Mauricio Pochettino. And it's a heavy beating for Michael Carrick and Middlesbrough, who came here with that first leg lead, but quickly that evaporated as Chelsea piled on the pressure and piled up the goals. Six of them in the end. Cole Palmer at the heart of many. He got two for himself and helped out many along the way. Middlesbrough in playing out from the back, played into Chelsea's hands. And Chelsea have a date on February the 25th as they look to win this competition for the sixth time in what will be their 10th League Cup final.
After the game was too many criticize, and of course always that is a thing that you cannot hear, and it's, I think it was good, but sometimes it's good to feel the, you know, this disappointment, because to have the opportunity to play the second leg in our stadium, I think was important, and the player I think today were fantastic.
And what a walloping it was. Don't think any of us, apart from Luke, obviously, saw that come in. But Chelsea demolished Middlesbrough in the second leg of the Carabao Cup semi-final to waltz through to the final. 6-2 on aggregate. Let's hear from Liam.
One set beyond has just gone off the PA system. We're now on to Blue Day. In this case, one step beyond leads to Wembley. And the Chelsea fans here at Stamford Bridge knew it after 43 minutes. That's when the first rousing rendition of Que Sera Sera reverberated around the Matthew Harding stand to my right. The fact that everyone here knew what the result was going to be, what the outcome was going to be before half-time, tells you everything about just how convincing Chelsea were. And it sounds strange to say that about this team given what we know about them, but they did everything that was expected of them at the Riverside and more. They finally showed the gulf between them and an equally, if not more, injury-ravaged Middlesbrough side, who, to their credit, never stopped trying, often to their detriment, kept trying to play out of defence and giving the ball away. They did make it quite easy for Chelsea in the end, but there was a real ruthlessness to get their passport to the final, as Mauricio Pochettino said in his pre-match press conference. There was a real hunger here for Chelsea. They want to be competing for trophies. That's not going to happen in the Premier League anytime soon. But this was always the carrot of this game, and all the pressure was on after the first leg. You could feel it at times in the first 10 to 15 minutes. Pochettino was not happy, particularly with the way that Chelsea were struggling to switch the ball to the left flank, where Mikhailo Mudryk, sorry to say, looked more lost than he has ever done in a Chelsea shirt in terms of knowing where to go, where to be. His teammates were trying to coach him through the game. I don't want to say too much more about it because it's clearly not the focus tonight, but his performances are a massive worry. That was the only negative for Chelsea tonight. Cole Palmer, excellent again, ruthless in a way that he wasn't in the first leg when presented, or in some cases when creating his own key chances. And just as importantly, I think Chelsea got some real attacking thrust from the fullback positions. How they've missed Ben Chilwell. Brilliant through ball for the first goal. He almost broke the deadlock himself with a great run in behind before that and got clattered by the goalkeeper for his trouble. He just gives so much from left back. And Axel Disasi might be a better right back than Levi Colwill as a left back, at least going forward. His goal was quite funny. He started running and it looked like he wouldn't be able to stop in time to avoid crashing into the hoardings, but he steadied himself enough to tap the ball into the empty net. There were a lot of simple finishes for Chelsea tonight, very composed finishes. We're back on K-Sara-Sara now, as you can hear. Chelsea are going to Wembley. They're doing it in a convincing fashion.
All right, Simon, I'm tempted to say, let's not get carried away, but after the last 18 months, sod it. Let's get carried away.
Absolutely. I think this is it depends what happens in the final still, but I think it's a really, really important achievement for everyone at the club. Whether you count a League Cup final as a good enough achievement for the amount of money spent, let's park that to one side. But crucially, and this is why I think I can celebrate the piece I wrote post-Newcastle, that turning point, which upset a lot of readers at the time, and I understood why, but it was such a huge moment in the season when you sort of think of how close Chelsea were going out. You could imagine the difference in mood, but how sort of getting to the latter stage of the League Cup was just given the season some impetus. Has there been the coincidence, the league form as well improving? I think you could say yes. I mean, the home form, it's predominantly, that's how Chelsea got to the League Cup finals, on the back of their home form, and they seem to have at least cracked that. Still a bit of work to do on the old away form, of course, but I just think it is something worth celebrating within reason. This is a new Chelsea. This is their first cup final and it's taken them, 18 months? It did feel like a long way away not so long ago, and now there's a really big occasion for everyone to look forward to.
Yeah, I felt that quite a long way away during the opening 10 minutes of the second leg as well, because Middlesbrough started the game well, but as soon as Housen put through his own net, on 15, the floodgates opened. It was 4-0 by half-time. Enzo, Disasi and Palmer making the tie safe before the break. So they all got on the score sheet, Dom, but probably the most significant contributor on the night was Ben Chilwell. We saw sort of in 45 minutes at least, never mind the 60 that he played, what he brings to this team in terms of the attacking threat that he offered.
And everything that Chelsea have lacked in his absence, really. That early headed chance that went just wide might have actually earned him a penalty as well for the follow through from Glover, sort of set the tone for everything that followed. He was, I think, actually from both flanks. This is the vision that we envisaged seeing from a Pochettino team with a threat coming from either flank and often from fullback, and it allows, with them bombing on the outside, it just creates so many more problems for opposing back lines and midfields getting dragged out of position, etc. And yeah, he adds another dimension to it. Liam wrote a very nice piece on both fullbacks' contributions that went out on Wednesday morning, and Axel Disasi deserves credit as well. But Chilwell is playing in his natural position. He will offer them so much. And it just reminds us that actually even in the dark times, even in the period where Chelsea weren't winning games consistently, when they did have Ben Chilwell and Reece James on the flanks and causing opposition issues, they were still a handful. And I imagine if Chilwell stays fit for the rest of the season, they will be a far more potent attacking threat than they have been of late.
Yeah, the only thing I'd add to that, I'm sure we've done it on The Athletic. I remember us doing a stat of Reece James, Ben Chilwell, how many times they played together. Sky Sports, in the build-up to the game, referred to it as 11 Premier League games together since the Champions League final. And I don't think that can be underestimated how big a blow that is and has been for Chelsea. Like, we're talking the equivalent of Alexander-Arnold and Robertson for Liverpool, who've played far, far more. These two guys are in that category of quality. And Chelsea have basically been without them for the best part of 3 years. I mean, it's been a devastating blow. And every time they play, as we saw with Chilwell, his impact was enormous on Tuesday night. And not only does he help Chelsea in attack, but it's the balance that the side suddenly gets. We saw Levi Colwill at last moved inside to his best position, and funnily enough, he looked quite comfortable there, far more comfortable than he does at left back. And yeah, I just thought Chilwell actually gave Chelsea that impetus. That first half performance where they wiped the floor with Middlesbrough was basically off the back of Chilwell's attacking threat on that left flank.
Yeah, and Thiago Silva picking him out with some wonderful passes as well. On that, here's Nate, who says, is anyone else concerned that Colwill at centre-back, Chilwell at left-back is only temporary? I'm worried that Poch only did it because Gusto and Reece are both injured. Simon, I feel like it's going to be a horses for courses thing, right? There'll be occasions where Colwill goes back to left-back and Chilwell moves up the pitch a little bit. And I guess the other thing is we're kind of assuming now that Ben Chilwell is fit and stays fit, which history tells us might not be a thing.
That's right, yeah. I mean, fingers crossed for him. I mean, if anyone deserves a break, along with Reece James, it's him in terms of the fitness department. He's very keen to be a leadership figure. Again, he was interviewed ahead of the game on the TV, and he was talking about how he wants to embrace this role, that having been part of the Champions League winning side, he feels that he's got a big part to play in helping all these players that have arrived in the last couple of years to get them back to that level. But as far as Pochettino's tactics are concerned, yeah, I could totally understand why people would be worried that Pochettino would revert back to how he used Chilwell at the start of the season. In some ways, he used that sort of ploy in the game itself. Chilwell was moved quite far forward at times. It wasn't like he was making all his runs from left back. He did make his runs from quite high up the pitch anyway, and Colwill sort of slipped in behind him. But I really hope that Pochettino does see the light. That when you see Ian Mattson, for example, now on loan at Borussia Dortmund, playing as a left back and thriving there, I get the height thing. We talked about this with Liam a week or two ago. I get the height thing and the concern about Chelsea's ability to defend from set pieces, and that's why you sort of add another centre back and left back. But I just think Chelsea lose far more by playing someone out of position like he has been.
Justin Mattson, because Rafa Honigstein wrote a very interesting piece for us again this week on the back of his two 90-minute appearances for Borussia Dortmund so far. He's done very, very well, made an immediate impression there, very positive, far more positive, you might argue, than Jadon Sancho has on his return. But he's actually been playing as a left-back who's gone into midfield in one of these, what do you call them, inverted, I don't know, I can't remember. This is all newfangled tactical nonsense as far as I'm concerned. But that's what he's been doing. He's been supplementing midfield when they've been in possession, etc. So it's quite interesting. He's obviously got that ability to do that. And I think Chelsea will watch his loan with interest and start wondering about that buyout clause in it and fretting about whether that was a bit too low if he carries on the way he started. I mean, you're right, Matt, to caveat all of this with the fact that Chelsea were playing championship opposition. I suspect that Chilwell was in an advanced position, but Barra sort of encouraged it, didn't they, for most of that hour of 65 minutes that he was on the pitch. And once they collapsed and their confidence was all over the place, really, by the break, it was he was camped in enemy territory, really. I suspect that if he's playing in a Premier League game, for example, or even possibly the cup tie on Friday, but Liverpool next week, I imagine that there'll be periods where Ben Chilwell is very much playing as a more conventional left back.
Yeah, and to back up Don's point, of course Chelsea had the benefit of Jones, who gave Cole so many problems being out injured. He wasn't tested defensively. He didn't have to worry about running back and forth, which was a good thing in terms of his first proper game back after injury. That those hamstrings weren't properly tested. He'll face much tougher tests than that in the Premier League, of course.
Yeah, I think Chelsea supporters can sympathise with Middlesbrough and the amount of absentees that they had in this game for various different reasons. It did feel a bit unfair of them. But also, you know, we've talked about the immaturity of Chelsea on the pitch. There's maybe a bit of immaturity from Michael Carrick as well to not notice what was happening and affect it, which definitely played into Chelsea's hands. Dom's right to mention Axel Disasi. You can really see improvement in him, I think, in the last few weeks, particularly coming forward. And Simon, I'd say the same about Enzo Fernandez. He started to chip in with goals now, up to 5 for the season. And that's important, isn't it? We've spoken about it before. Gallagher and Caicedo both yet to find the net this season. So somebody needs to be contributing. It looks like he's capable of doing that.
Yeah, still needs to work on his shooting from outside the penalty area. Does he ever get one on target? They always seem to be over the bar. For a player of his quality, like he's brilliant. I've been a fan of his from the moment he arrived, and he did suffer a significant dip from about September to early December, maybe even longer than that. Of course, talk of this groin injury, obviously he's played an incredible amount of football over the last 18 months, 2 years.
No hernia either? Guz asked us if he's carrying a hernia. Doesn't look like it, does it?
Yeah, I think that's kind of... Yeah, whether it's groin hernia, that's the question. There was a lot of chat about it. It was around the Newcastle EFL Cup game. And of course, you saw him. He was taken off quite early on in the second half, if memory serves. And then when on the lap of honour, he was basically holding back the tears. And you just thought, my word, is season over sort of thing, you know. And there was a lot of chat in Argentina that he needed an operation, all this kind of thing. But suddenly, he does look re-energised. And in terms of the goals, it's massively important. When Chelsea don't really have a goal-scoring centre-forward at the moment, you need goals from all parts of the pitch just to take some of the pressure off. And he's starting to make those runs. He played very high up against Middlesbrough. Again, we should sort of, as Dom said, it's Championship opposition and Chelsea were dominating and were allowed to dominate. So it's a lot easier when you don't have to worry about tracking back. And let's just say Enzo Fernandez is not the quickest when it comes to being a defensive player. But I'm just glad that he's rediscovered some of his spark because, as I said, I think as far as Chelsea signings go, he's been one of the better ones. Despite the huge cost, you can see that he's got the quality. It's just whether he's fit enough to produce it on a regular basis.
Yeah, and I think Moises Caicedo is improving too. And it was an important point, I think, that Maurizio Pochettino made in the pre-match press conference, that Caicedo's had more important things on his mind with the situation in Ecuador. So that's something to bear in mind with him too. Dom, I've shown rare discipline here to get to this stage of the pod without talking about Cole Palmer. But we've got to do it now. He's already beaten Kai Havertz as the top scorer from last season. And that little shimmy before his first goal, he's just a sort of effortless, gorgeous footballer. I still can't believe that Chelsea got him for the price that they did. And how quickly he's become, I would say, the most important player in this team.
Yeah, he's sort of reveling in being the main man, isn't he? You can see that why he might have become frustrated at Manchester City, where he's surrounded by... Well, let's be honest, players of a slightly higher calibre and reputation than the many of Chelsea's. Yeah, he caresses the ball. He has that ability that when the ball comes to him, he just looks as if he has more time than anyone else, which is a rare skill and a rare talent to have. The exciting thing about him, and Pochettino has mentioned this, he's still got more talent to come out. I think he'll develop more with this regular game time that he's now getting at Chelsea, and being the main man will encourage that more. I'm sure being the man around which this Chelsea attack now revolves. Yeah, sublime touch, great vision, wonderful finish. I actually love the second finish as well because he doesn't hammer that into the net. He just side foots it, and the pace at which it travels beyond Glover is quite something. And a lovely cutback by Conor Gallagher as well. But of all the transfer business they've done, that was the one that seemed to come with a bit of a warning almost. If Manchester City are letting him go, then there must be something not quite right about it all. But actually, that looks like the coup, that they've paid a good price for a very, very rare talent.
It was the backheel nutmeg for me. Yeah, when the game was kind of Chelsea were going through the motions, they're 4-0 up, ties won, there wasn't much urgency to go on and you know, with the Aston Villa game coming up so soon. And you could just tell it was all sort of limping to a bit of a damp squib of a finish, if that's the right way of putting it. And then suddenly he produces this. I mean, I feel sorry for, I can't remember who it was that he did it on. And it is kind of taking the mickey a bit, but that's what the crowd wants. And you could just hear the crowd, you know, the reaction from the crowd. And Pat Nevin's has spoken recently about the atmosphere at Stamford Bridge and how bad it's been. Well, Cole Palmer is the kind of player that is going to revive, or he's breathing life back into Stamford Bridge, because suddenly there's a player that fans want to pay money to see. And they don't know what he's going to do next. And I agree with Dom. I think the finish for the second goal is incredibly underrated in many ways, because it is a pass coming across you at relative pace. And he just sort of, shall we use a cricket analogy, Dom, where you just milk the bowling and I use the pace of the bowler to sort of take the delivery to the boundary. It felt a bit like that. He just sort of just used it, steered it into the corner. First time, that's probably a rubbish analogy. Don't use it then, Lucy. And
it's a great analogy, Crossover, but it will ostracize at least 70% of the blooming listenership. But you know, the audience is gone now.
Maybe it's because I've got India v England on my mind. I haven't even, you know, get your mind back on the game, Simon. And but no, it was a great bit, and it just shows the confidence that he's exuding at the moment, and certainly made amends for the first leg. I think he probably was more motivated for this game than many others since he arrived, because he wanted to put things right.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Sam Parkin, our friend, was on commentary with me for this, and he said he's such a brave player because he always seems to look for the difficult pass rather than the easy pass. And even if he doesn't make it, it doesn't bother him, and he tries the difficult pass again the next time.
Like the ball to Di Sassi, right? Which was such a shame that Di Sassi, you could tell Di Sassi, he was really frustrated with it. Partly probably because he's going, oh, I didn't make the most of that chip pass. But yeah, very exciting player.
Great night for him, Dom. Not so much for Armando Breuer. Thought he'd got the first goal. Turned out it was an own goal. He must feel like he's on trial every game at the moment, given the stories that Chelsea are trying to get rid of him.
Yeah, it's a tough one. It is a tough situation for him to be in, but you know, he can only do what he can do. I mean, all the younger players breaking into the team, they have to seize the opportunity when they're there, when it's there. And he's had two games now against Middlesbrough and one against Preston out of his last four. That's, you know, three against Championship opposition, and there have been flashes in those, but not the sort of persuasive sort of indication that this is a £50 million striker that really should be playing every week in the Premier League. And that's probably just a reflection of where he is in his development. Coming back from the ACL, you know, basically the most consistent run of top flight games he's had since he's come through have been at Southampton on loan. He did well there in a different kind of setup. But we've only seen flashes this season with him, and look, I don't, as we discussed last week, I don't think there's really a lot of chance that he's going to move on permanently this window. So there should be opportunities for the rest of this season, realistically, even when Nicholas Jackson comes back, and dependent upon what Chelsea decide to do in the last few days of the window. But I don't think anyone's going to pay the price that's been mooted for his services, and he's just got to hope that he gets adequate game time in what remains of the season to kick his development on and persuade Pochettino that he should be involved in the first team setup next season, and indeed persuade the ownership that he should be there and that he's an asset worth pursuing.
Now, what about Leo Castledine, Simon? Do you think he's an asset worth pursuing? Came on for his debut here. Feels like he's had to wait ages for it because he's been on the bench regularly this season. So it's good to see him finally get a run out, albeit there was little excuse not to play him at 6-1 up.
Yeah, I must admit, I was going, what's Pochettino waiting for? He's 6-0 up. Like, why is he not on the pitch yet? But yes, finally he gets a chance. And yes, he's definitely a talent. I reposted my piece on there, Karlstein, that I wrote, which details how from John Terry to Ashley Cole, he's got his admirers from Chelsea greats. I think John Terry even tweeted on the night itself about Leo. He's very much in the sort of Conor Gallagher mode. And when you sort of think that Chelsea are thinking of selling Conor Gallagher, not saying that Leo Carlstein could come straight in and play as many games as Conor Gallagher has this season. But you could understand, whilst not saying I agree with the decision, but you could understand why the owners might sort of be thinking, well, sell Conor Gallagher and promote this guy, then start playing him and then sell him as well. You know, it's not beyond the realms of possibility. So I really like Leo. I've watched him a lot at youth level. He's consistently played above his age group. So he's not afraid of stepping up and playing against people that are older and more experienced than him. The question is, will he get the chance? I think a loan is probably going to be the next move, inevitably, given he's an academy player. But I was delighted for him, and his family were there to see it. And of course, his dad is Stuart Karlstein, who played for old Wimbledon. I don't know how do you refer to proper Wimbledon? The team that won the FA Cup.
Maybe Wimbledon FC rather than AFC Wimbledon.
But, yeah. The Wimbledon that won the FA Cup in 1988. Not that he was part of that, but the club of that history. But yeah, great moment for him. And let's hope it's not like he would have actually played against Preston in the FA Cup, but in the day or two before the game, I actually know which first team player injured him. But he had a really nasty gash, really bad one in his shin. And he was told he had to stop training and couldn't be involved. So just shows as well how luck can play a part in these things. So Pochettino was going to play him at some point against Preston. And unfortunately, he had to spend a week just resting that shin, waiting for it to heal.
Do you want a Leo Castledine fact that you might not know? Albeit, Simon, you probably do because you know everything. So famous family, right? Dad, Stuart, played for Wimbledon. Mum, Lucy, once of Homes Under the Hammer. Sister Kitty is in EastEnders.
Yeah, I did know that, yeah.
Oh, man, I was going to go dun, 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 to bring that part to a close. But if you already knew, it's not dramatic.
Very successful, talented family, which puts me and mine to shame.
Same. All right, well, Chelsea's Cup really does runneth over this week. Later, we'll report on the Women's Champions League. But next, it's all about round four in the Football Association's Challenge Cup.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Chelsea versus Aston Villa is under the Friday night lights then. Clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose. Well, some odd can, or it could be a draw, I suppose. If you're wondering why it is on Friday night, yet not televised here in the good old U of K, it's because Fulham were drawn at home. They play Newcastle on Saturday, but because their Carabao semi was on Wednesday and they play a league game on Tuesday, Saturday was the only day they could host their tie. It makes sense, honestly. Trust me. Simon, Villa have had a free week, but they have dipped off a little bit in recent times. And away from home, they've not been as strong as they have been at Villa Park. So Chelsea will go into this game with plenty of confidence, despite having been beaten at Stamford Bridge by Villa this season.
Yeah, and inevitably the feel-good factor from Tuesday night. But there's no doubt that it is an advantage that Aston Villa have had so long to prepare. And they have confidence of themselves, of having come to Stamford Bridge a couple of times in recent years and winning. So it's going to be a really tough tie, this. Like, Unai Emery's done a wonderful job, incredible job at Aston Villa. He's turned them from relegation candidates to title contenders. I mean, they're not going to win the league, but the fact they're even up there is just phenomenal. So, I don't think anyone's under an illusion that Chelsea have finally perhaps been handed a really tough cup tie in an early round, having had quite a reasonable draw in the EFL Cup. All respect to Brighton and Newcastle, of course, but I think Aston Villa are a team actually that are banging form.
But history tells us, Dom, that Unai Emery might well rotate for this game, right? He did so last season in the FA Cup, got knocked out by Stevenage. Did in the League Cup, they got knocked out in the first round. They played at home to Everton. And I'm guessing this is third on their list of priorities, right? Because they've got a big game in the league against Newcastle on Tuesday. And obviously the Conference League, everybody's already got them down as winners of that. So might they sort of mix things up a bit, and that might give Chelsea an advantage here?
Well, potentially, I guess. I mean, they did mix things up a bit in the previous round when they won at Middlesbrough 1-0. The likes of Douglas Luiz, who's a key player for them, started on the bench that day, and they even, and Ollie Watkins as well, Diaby. They even had an unfancied striker called John Duran, who started that match and played 70 minutes. I mean, he's got a bit part role to play in any Premier League team, surely.
It's the John Duran derby.
I suspect they will. I think you're right. I think it would be the sensible thing for them to do, given their Tuesday and Saturday fixtures to come in the Premier League, where they have been resurgent this season. Well, really, since Unai Emery took over from Steven Gerrard. So there is hope in that. But then I guess you might argue that Chelsea might make a few changes as well, given they've got an awkward trip to Merseyside coming up, looming very large on the horizon.
You wonder what those changes could be, really, though, Simon, don't you? Because still we're looking at Chelsea and seeing the players who are out as much as we see the players who are available. Christopher Nkunku, we don't know yet, but, you know, are we ever going to know when he's going to come back to full fitness? Maybe a start for Connie Chukwuemeka against his old club?
Possibly. I think Conor Gallagher is obviously lined up to start, given he came off the bench on Tuesday night. But I'm just encouraged to see Chukwuemeka back at all. He's clearly, I wouldn't be surprised if he comes on, if he doesn't start, which in itself is a good thing for Pochettino to have that strength in depth off the bench, which he really hasn't had all season due to the amount of injuries. And Chukwuemeka, as you showed at West Ham when he scored that wonderful goal and then got injured, but even in the little cameos he's had since returning from injury, you can see the qualities there. And I think he will add, talking about goal threat from earlier on in the pod, I think he will add more goal threat in advanced position. Connor brings the energy and they're winning the ball back. But I think Carney Chukwuemeka is definitely a better, sort of more of a goal threat. And so whilst it may come as a bit early for him to start a game, I think Pochettino would be worried about protecting these injured players that are coming back. I do see him getting some game time, and that's always going to be a plus.
A lot of people, Dom, were asking us about the form of Mykhailo Mudryk, who didn't have a very good game against Middlesbrough. I don't really want to put the boot into him because we can all see that he's struggling, but might that mean that Noni Madueke comes in from the off here?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that would be an obvious change. I mean, there are a few that you think it'll be two of Palmer, Sterling, Madueke with Gallagher coming back in as well. And Madueke he probably needs a start now. He had that little flurry, didn't he, where we thought around the Luton game where we thought he was going to make himself a fixture in the team, but he's sort of been in and out a bit since. So bringing him in from the start for slightly out of sorts Mudryk would make sense. I've actually got Liam looking at Mykhailo Mudryk's form, and it's been a year now at Chelsea, and I know there's an adaptation period that every young player has to go through, particularly one that's, you know, come from a war-torn country where his concerns are very much on what's happening back home, I would imagine. But I think we just need to assess where we're at with him and where that hefty transfer is a year down the line. There's still so much raw talent there, but it's just whether Mudryk is taking on board the coaching that he's getting and whether that's refining his game and whether we're seeing evidence of that. Because too often in matches, he just looks a bit lost. And that suggests that he's not taking on the information quite as well in the training sessions that maybe some of the other players are.
He shows in flashes, doesn't he? Like, there's usually a moment a game, and this is by no means enough for someone that costs 62 million plus add-ons. He'll usually do something in the game. You go, there you go. Like, there's the quality. But then for the rest of the game, yeah, he's running around like a lost child at a train station or something. All I want to add is, and I said this on the Slack channel when this was being debated, that he has scored the most important goal of Pochettino's era. Like, that goal against Newcastle, mm-hmm. going back to the League Cup conversation from earlier, undoubtedly the most important goal. And that in itself is kind of what I'm saying is I don't think he was having an amazing performance that night, but that finish in injury time with all the pressure, the ball drops and he's got to find the net. He delivered. So in Mudryk we trust.
As long as he doesn't have too long to make the decision, that seems to be the key thing.
That's
it,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's instinct. When instinct takes over, he you can see the talent, but it's when he has too long to think about it that he gets confused, unfortunately.
I'm no sports psychiatrist or expert or expert in anything, to be fair, but I just think he's a classic example of it's all in his head or perhaps not in his head. You know, that he's thinking too, like, if he just goes out and does what he can do, I think there's a player there. But all the time, it's almost like he's thinking what he's been told he should be doing rather than just doing it. It's not playing off instinct. It's not just going out there and doing it. It's just sort of, oh, where should I be? All right, okay. Oh, and he also cuts inside far too much, doesn't he? Just make one run down the left. Just one to the byline. See what happens. You might throw the opposition completely out of whack. They'll be like, hang on a minute, he's running down the byline. We've never seen this before.
He's 23, so there's still time for him to improve. He also hasn't played 90 minutes for Chelsea yet this season, which probably doesn't help. Let's see if he does it on Friday night. Right, we're going to focus on the women's team next.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
So the women booked their place in the knockout stages of the Champions League on Wednesday when they beat Real Madrid. Our friend Jessie Parker-Humphreys was there and sent us this voice note.
So Chelsea find themselves through to the Champions League quarterfinals, top of their group with a game to spare, thanks in part to the 0-0 draw between Paris FC and BK Häcken. But it's fair to say that it wasn't the most convincing performance against Real Madrid. I think very clear that Chelsea are still figuring out what this post-Sam Kerr world looks like, both in terms of how they attack and in terms of leadership on the pitch. For the former, Mayra Ramirez is rumoured to be joining from Levante. Very exciting forward who shone for Colombia at the World Cup. Very physical player as well, who I think will be really, really suited to English football. The leadership element is a little bit more complicated. Erin Cuthbert had the armband last night and continued her run of great performances. Neve Charles obviously had it on Sunday, and Hayes talked after the game about how she wants to develop these players. You know, Charles is 24, Cuthbert's 25. She sees them as the future leaders at the club. But at the same time, it still feels like they're growing into that role. They're learning how to be on the pitch, how to pull this team forward. And there were moments in the game last night where it felt like Chelsea just lost a little bit of that intensity. But there's also a lot of games coming up. Chelsea are in the middle of this period where they're playing basically four games in 10 days. So they're away at Brighton on Saturday. But the benefit is obviously that that away game in Paris, the final group stage game, is basically meaningless at this point. So hopefully an opportunity there for Hayes to rotate the team, to give other players some minutes. Potentially, you know, people like starts for Aggie Beaver-Jones, who was only started once this season but has continued to impress when she's come off the bench. So at the end of the day, Chelsea will just be happy to have got it done. They found group stages hard in the past, so to go through as group winners as well will be a really big boost. Should mean that they will avoid teams like Barcelona and Lyon in that quarterfinal.
There has also been some transfer activity with regards to the women's team. Firstly, midfielder Jessie Fleming is on the move to Portland Thorns. Reports suggest Chelsea will receive £250,000 for the Canadian, who's won seven major trophies during her 3.5 years at Chelsea, but has struggled for minutes this season. And meanwhile, we may have the answer to our question, how did Chelsea replace Sam Kerr? As Jessie mentioned, the Blues set to bolster their forward ranks with the addition of Colombian international Mayra Ramirez, who is seemingly on the way to London from Levante. She's got 6 goals in 7 games in the Liga FA this season and played for Colombia at last year's World Cup. Some other interesting news as regards the women's team. Casey Stoney had been one of the front runners to replace Emma Hayes, but she's staying at San Diego Wave, per a video the club released on X, formerly known as Twitter. Chelsea go to Brighton in the WSL on Saturday tea time. Elsewhere in Chelsea news, in terms of the men's academy sides, the under-21s enjoyed a 4-1 win over Colchester in the Premier League Cup at King's Meadow on Monday night. Frankie Runham's lovely turn and finish got the party started after 4 minutes. It was pretty much all over midway through the first half after Zane Silcott-Jubri and Michael Golding made it 3-0. There was an own goal in the second half to make it 4-0, and then Colchester got a late consolation. Don't know if you spotted this, Simon, but John Terry's nephew lined up for Colchester in this game. His name is Frankie Terry. If that is not the most Chelsea Football Manager regen name ever, then I'm not sure what is. Would you believe it? He played at centre-half as well.
His first name wasn't Super, no?
He was captain, leader, beaten by the end of it. The Dev squad are back in PL2 action this weekend. They host Reading. Next today, we'll do a quiz. Right, this is Chelsea-Aston Villa themed. One of those difficult quizzes for me to write because it's probably like the 10th I've done on this theme. So if there's any repeated questions, blame Lucy? I don't know. Dom, you're up first. Who has Carney Chukwuemeka made more appearances for, Chelsea or Villa?
Shall I say Chelsea?
You're correct. It's 18 for Chelsea. 16 for Villa.
18 for Chelsea. That's
yeah,
amazing.
Surprising, that, isn't it?
More than you thought, yeah. When it's thought.
Yeah. Well, I try to, you know, make you think as well as learn something with this quiz.
Hope I've done. How long have you got?
Here you go, Simon. Is your first. Who did Ryan Bertrand make more appearances for, Chelsea or Aston Villa?
Oh, crikey. I'm going Chelsea again.
Yeah, not even close, actually. 57 for Chelsea, 16 for Villa. You wouldn't have thought he'd made 57 for Chelsea, would you? But that's what my friends at Soccer Base say. So
I just had Champions League final and I was going, well...
Did he play any other games for Chelsea at all? Second question for you, Dom. Chelsea have blanked in their last 3 games against Villa. Who was the last player to score against them for the Blues? The player in question got a brace in the game. And tell you that Lucy is right in the tiebreaker as we speak.
About the last three. Okay, so that's this season and last season. So that takes us back to 21-22, which was the sanctioned season. Who scored goals then? Jorginho scored lots of penalties. Did he score two?
That is unbelievable. It was really fascinating to watch the process. You're absolutely correct. It was a 3-1 win at Villa Park on Boxing Day. Some fellow called Lukaku.
I might have to retire as well. That.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
I was just smart because Dom has this routine in a quiz. I'll just talk about myself. I just go blank and don't even start thinking. And it's just to take tips from the man, the legend that is Dom, because he actually thinks about it.
He thinks about it, but I mean, psychologically, I think he's on a different plane to the rest of you, because he can kind of beat you before the answer with the way that he frames his run up to it. It's 2-1.
Well, I'll take that into my day.
Right, Simon, you've still got a chance of winning. Here's your second question. Both Chelsea and Villa have the same player at the top of their respective charts for assists this season. Name those players. So who's got the most assists for Aston Villa and who's got the most assists for Chelsea?
Right, take a leaf out of Dom's book. Right, so in 1975...
Up to first starting counting assists.
Chelsea most assists. Let's start with Chelsea. What about Villa? I'm going to go Harvey Vale.
Harvey Vale is an interesting shout, given that he's currently on loan at Bristol Rovers. Yeah,
what am I saying? Cole Palmer. What on earth? It's because I was waiting for you to talk about.
You might have to deal with every single day, Matt.
Blimey, where did that come from? Yeah, I don't know. Harvey, but no, I stick with Harvey Vale.
stick with Cole Palmer because that's right.
Yeah, so that was really random, wasn't it?
Remarkable scenes.
It's just been on my brain for, well, almost a week. Aston Villa, most assists.
Stop saying Harvey Vale. It's Cole Palmer.
Cole Palmer, most assists. Well, I think you flummoxed me with asking me about a different club. Aston Villa, most assists. I think he plays for Aston Villa. Suddenly I've gone blank. John McGinn.
No, it's incorrect, I'm afraid. I'm not going to pass this over, Dom, because there's only half a point on offer and I don't want you to just trounce Simon. It's Ollie Watkins is the answer. Yeah. So both players are the top scorers and top assist makers for their clubs.
That's a good stat.
Yeah, should have known that. Interesting. Right, Dom, here's question number 3 for you. Chelsea haven't played Villa in the FA Cup since 2010. At what stage of the competition did they meet that season? Cogs are wearing.
Here we go, look.
Pretending he doesn't know. Yeah. Yeah. Well,
2010.
I'm going back to Harvey Vale.
All these old ones, I have to sort of try and recall who was the Chelsea manager at the time, because it changed every 5 minutes. 2010 would have been Carlo Ancelotti. And he won it because they did the double in 9-10, didn't they?
Lucy says you've got to get the scorers in the game as well.
I'd say semi-final.
Yeah. If you can get the scorers as well, just a showboat. And...
Well, back then, it was always Lampard, so he'll have scored. and Drogba scored about 30 goals that season, so he probably scored. And I don't know what the final score was. What was the final score?
3-0.
Malouda?
3-0.
Malouda is correct.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go. So, well done. Malouda had a good season that year as well, didn't he?
Yeah.
All right, well, that's enough to give you the win, Dom. I mean, never mind Simon. Toomey and Bosher have just got to be quaking in their boots here at this real flex from Fifield. Let's see if you can get your final question, Simon. Who were the only two English players to feature for Chelsea in the 2000 FA Cup final against Aston Villa? One started, one came off the bench late on.
Was that the Liverpool game? No,
it was the FA Cup final against Aston Villa.
Oh, sorry, I'm getting wrong. Sorry, I didn't listen to the question. I should probably listen to the question as well.
It wasn't Harvey Vale.
Cole Palmer.
So what was the question again?
The question was, who were the only two English players to feature for Chelsea in the 2000 FA Cup final win against Aston Villa? One started, one came off the bench. Come on, Simon, you can do this. Harvey Vale wasn't born for another 3 years, so it definitely wasn't.
I've got names in my head, but I don't think it's right, but I've lost anyway. So, Jody and Eddie Newton.
Jody's right. He came off the bench on 89. This is interesting, right? Because I put this question to Sam Parkin and Ben Andrews upon the gantry on Tuesday when I'd just written it, and neither of them got the starter either. Dom's going to tell us who it was.
I imagine it was Dennis Wise, wasn't it?
Of course it was Dennis Wise. He was the flipping captain. It's that famous picture of him with his kid in one arm and the cup in the other.
Oh, that's
even I knew
terrible.
That.
That's terrible.
Very, very bad. But still, you were Dom. So well done. So you can tell us just to twist the knife. John Duran is credited with making 102 total career appearances on Wikipedia. How many goals has he scored? Lucy's tiebreaker.
Probably about 15 or something stupid.
Ooh, it's not a bad guess. Simon?
11.
19 is the answer.
Can I throw a question at you, Matt?
You can. Simon, I'm not saying that it's going to make the edit, but you can certainly do it. No. Let's see if I get it right.
When was the last time Chelsea lost in the FA Cup fourth round, and who beat them?
Wasn't that Everton one on penalties at the Bridge? Oh, was it Bradford? Was that the fifth round?
Bradford, yeah.
Yes, very good. Bradford.
2015. Yeah.
Fourth round, yeah.
It was Chelsea's only home defeat that season.
Yeah, I took my father up onto the gantry and he had a great time. And I was trying to explain to him that it wasn't actually that good for the family that Chelsea had exited the FA Cup at that stage. Was that the minutes when Mourinho came in and said, I want to talk about, and he just listed 3 minutes? Was it that
game?
That was later in the season, wasn't it?
I think that may have been Sunderland.
Maybe the previous season. Yeah, Sunderland, the previous season.
When they lost effectively lost the title.
Bradford was the one where John Stead went on the radio on the Monday and said Mourinho came into the Bradford dressing room after the game and just said, big balls, and walked out again, which was quite Jose-ish, I suppose. Anyway, that was a fun quiz, particularly for Dom, who wins as ever. Before we go, we're going to hear from a Chelsea player. Simon had a chat with Harvey Vale for a piece that's up on The Athletic now. Let's hear a little bit of that conversation.
One I speak to the most at the moment is probably Alfie Gilchrist.
Of course.
Obviously, he's coming on quite a few times, and I've been mates with him for quite a long time now. And we're sort of always asking each other, like, what's your plans? How are you doing?
Yeah.
Plan to meet up on sort of weekends and stuff like that on a Sunday. He's probably the one I speak to most, just ask him sort of how's it going and congratulate him because he's been doing well at the minute, isn't he?
Have you been... You're obviously delighted for him, but have you also been teasing him a bit about some of his...
Like
the... when he ran like a nutter at the ball again. Crystal Palace?
Yeah, it was his first game, I think. And he just started charging around trying to headbutt him.
Isn't that basically Alfie?
Yeah, that's him in a nutshell. He'll give everything for Chelsea and sort of whatever team he's on the pitch for. And that's just his character. And that sort of little cameo was a great sort of... sum up of who he is. He's a defender who loves defending and he'll do anything to sort of get a clean sheet.
Yeah. How long have you been mates for? We're talking many, many years.
Since I came to Chelsea, really.
Since
since I was 12 years old, yeah. We've been pretty close, and especially sort of the last 3-4 years where we've been in 23s together, we've grown really close, yeah.
So presumably you've had lots of chats, I think you've really sort of intimated this, lots of chats over the years about your dreams and ambitions.
Yeah.
Presumably one of those is we'll play for Chelsea together sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely. I think every sort of, when you have sort of mates in the academy and they like you to go watch the first team games and stuff like that. And when you see the likes of like Reece and Connor and Trevor and that, obviously they came through the academy playing together and we're probably sitting in the stands going like, that could be us, us one day. And that is the dream, yeah.
Yeah, so you must see Alfie now, and is that giving you a bit more encouragement? Sort of like, oh well, he's started to get some minutes now, and I know you've already made your debut for Chelsea, but you know, to sort of
100%. You see, he's getting chances, and that it probably worked like the same way for him when I was when I made my debut and stuff, he probably looked at me like, oh, Harvey's getting chances. Yeah. Hopefully mine will come in the future. And obviously he's kept working hard and he has got his chance. But to see sort of the academy boys even on the bench at the minute, it's quite, there's been quite a few of them. Definitely gives you...
Yeah, because you must... Yeah, because a lot of people sort of always comments about the Chelsea academy. But again, for you personally, it must be reassuring to think, okay, there's still a pathway if I can prove myself.
Yeah, I think definitely. I think it's never going to be easy. It's never going to be like, oh, you've done well. Here's games and stuff like that. You've got to really work hard for it, and that's fair enough because it is one of the biggest clubs in the world. It's not going to be easy. But as soon as you do see stuff like that, it gives you hope, and you know, if I'm doing well, if I'm working hard, if I impress the manager, then there will be a chance in the future.
So you didn't call him Cole Palmer, so that was good. How did you find it? Because it's been an interesting season for him, hasn't it? Because he starts every week for Bristol Rovers, but they've had a change of manager and actually they've had quite the dip in form since the turn of the year too.
Yeah, no, he was in great spirits. I think it's his first proper sit down with anyone, and I'd like to think I put him at ease. we didn't talk about a certain ex-Bristol Rovers manager, which perhaps helped. And no, I he came across really well. He's obviously having to get used to playing in a different role. And funny enough, when I spoke to him, which was before the Blackpool game, Bristol Rovers, he told me that they'd had a meeting, team meeting, a day or two before about their sort of, right, let's push for the playoffs. We can still do it. Unfortunately, they've lost twice since then and it's pretty much kiboshed that. But no, he came across great. I found, obviously, that the main hook that I went in on the piece is his very good achievement of being the lone player with the most minutes this season. And given the contrast with what he experienced at Hull last year when he suffered an injury and then barely got a kick of a ball, I just think it's a massive loan for him. He knows full well the challenges that await him in terms of making it at Chelsea. He's not foolish. He's not blind to how Chelsea are operating, but it's still his dream. And as the clip shows, it's his dream that he shares with a long-term friend, Alfie Gilchrist. So I'm rooting for him. I think he's a player with a lot of quality, playing in this different position. He's learning a different side of the game, which can only help him going forward. He's an attacking player, but he's learning the defence side of the game. And any experience is a good one. But let's see what the summer holds. And surely another loan will come to at a high level where he'll have to prove himself again.
He'll be trying to score against a Chelsea goalie at the weekend because Bristol Rovers play Oxford, where Jamie Cumming is currently on loan. So do check that piece out up on The Athletic, athletic.com/ChelseaPod, the place to go to sign up if you aren't currently a subscriber. Elsewhere, Jesse's got a piece up looking at how Brexit is stopping top talent from joining the WSL. Dom, is there anything else we should be keeping an eye out for?
Well, we'll have the Mudryk piece probably for start of next week. We'll also be looking at Cole Palmer's fantastic contribution. That will go up at some point in the week after. We've got lots of good Chelsea content on the way with people like Liam and Simon writing so well.
Yes, they surely do. So do go and check it out. If you want to help us out, you can leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. It's the best way to help other Chelsea supporters find us. You can follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at SO Cobham Pod. We should be back with another show on Monday. The transfer window will be winding down. We'll look back on the FA Cup game, the women's game, ahead to that big match at Anfield in midweek two. Lots going on, as is ever the case in the world of Chelsea Football Club. For now, though, thanks to Jesse for their contributions. Thanks to Simon and to Dom and to Lucy for putting it all together. Mainly, though, to you for joining us. We'll be back with you next week. Bye for now.
The Athletic.